So, hey Michelle, what's new on your calendar from the new week of October, end of October, beginning of November?
What's new on my calendar?
Well, what's new in your life? What's new in your life that you can share for the.
I don't think I have much that I couldn't share. It's things that wouldn't be necessarily relevant or
Well, what do you think we're trying to stay relevant to? We haven't really defined a topic focus of our podcast yet.
Well, that's very good point.
Is it scary for you to have no control over what I could put on the thing?
Yes, it is, but I do trust you.
You do?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah, it's I don't know. I try not to make it. If you want something out of it, I'll leave it out of it.
I know you would.
Like I
I mean, I
left
believe you would.
last time it was funny, there was something funny that I thought was funny that you didn't want that I left out.
Yeah, I remember. I even remember what it was. Yeah, that was probably a really good idea, though.
Yeah.
Even in retrospect, yeah. And something else. I mean, last time we were talking about the different podcasts and things, and we were talking about we brought up Tim Ferriss, and I started talking about Tim Ferriss and the bulletproof coffee and everything. And I obviously got my gurus mixed up because I should have known better. I just didn't have the information in front of me. But that's Dave Asprey, and he does all the bulletproof executive stuff, and he does. It's the same kind of thing as far as I think they're both considered biohackers and everything, but it's just a different kind where Tim Ferriss does the book writing and he's got the best-selling books and all this kind of stuff, the 4-hour everything. And then I think Dave Asprey deals, I don't know, it's different, but they're both like these great, great guru guys, but I can't believe I mixed up their names,
Well, Tim
so.
Ferriss talked about that coffee.
He did, and I believe he was actually maybe even in a podcast with Dave Asprey.
Maybe that's it then.
Maybe not, but if he wasn't, I know that I have read about him with that, but I just got it all mixed up because they're both great and they're both real inspirational, and I can't believe I mixed up who they were.
Yeah, that was pretty bad.
That's pretty bad. I know. I should be ashamed.
So I didn't really go into much into that. You had something where people got their pictures taken online, and then the photographer kind of artificially made people get close, uncomfortably close, and then watched their reaction.
Yeah.
I just watched a little bit of it. I didn't really study it too hard.
I thought it was super, super interesting. The more I looked at that, the more I could relate it to a lot of different areas of life. What the photographer actually was doing, I think, was he found these people in, I think it was New York, and he would just pair these seemingly unlikely people together, and he would put them in positions that seemed very intimate, family intimate or whatever. And the things that would come through on the camera was just astonishing. When you look at these pictures, you would not think these people had met a few minutes ago, for the most part. Now, there were some, particularly in guy-guy situations, that they just looked super, super awkward, and they had a really hard time, particularly with the touch, I think. But a lot of them, if you looked at it, you would think these people were lifelong, I mean, family, whether they were blood related or not. And I think the point was that we all try to reach out to somebody on this human level, and that it's even something that's capturable. And
But
I'm
don't
paraphrasing.
you think the point might be that we have a net that the point might be the opposite, that we have this artificial protective n shell that we put on, that the natural thing is like to just relate and be close and communicate and t with touch and talk and sight and all that, but we put an artificial barrier up, and then this camera guy kind of erased that barrier.
Well, yeah. Is it artificial, or is it a real barrier that we put up in our day-to-day lives.
Well, it's created. It's created by the human. Like, look at a little kid. A little toddler kid will toddle up to anyone and everyone at a party and just be like, oh, you know, what are you doing? Pick me up, you know. But then when they're 20, they'll be shy or they'll be, you know, they'll be much more reserved about who they go up and just fearlessly encounter in a social setting.
But these people, even if they still felt awkward, what was coming through in the lens was a need for this connection. And like I said, I'm totally paraphrasing this, but it's a really, really interesting article to me about how humans connect on maybe on a level that we don't even realize sometimes, and how much we might need that connection.
What makes you think they needed to connect by those photos?
I don't think they necessarily needed to connect necessarily for the photos. I think that when we strip everything away and you put people in an intimate setting, that our need for human contact and human interaction maybe, and the need for the love and the feel love comes out.
That's what I'm asking you, though. Why do you think it's need? Why is it need? Why are you saying the word need?
You don't think love is a need?
Not in the context of those photos. I don't think it was a need. Like, I need to be close to this person. I need to express, like, affection. I think it was just a natural, like, this feels right. I don't think they were satisfying a need. I think they were just doing what was naturally within them without the artificial shell that social protocol kind of makes us, you know, observe.
Well, I absolutely agree. I don't think they needed to feel close to this person specifically, but I think it's just our human need maybe to feel close to other humans. And when everything's kind of stripped away and you're put in this artificial sense of intimacy with somebody, there was, you know, pictures of women with their heads laying on another woman's shoulder and the other woman's arm up on her, the first woman's arm, and just, it was very intimate, and what was coming through felt real.
Well, I'm not saying it's not real, but I don't think it was neat. I think it was just like a natural, like without any artificial constrictions, this is the natural way that people would, you know, relate to each other. Well, we missed last week, so I had to do a 55-second podcast all by myself.
I know, but you did great.
See how important you are, that without you, I can only go 55 seconds?
That's telling.
I could have gone more, actually, but I was trying to get this. I was trying to get a baseball game prediction in before the game started so people wouldn't just roll their eyes and go, oh, yeah, sure, that's easy in the eighth inning.
Yeah, that's but you did great, and you actually predicted the right game and everything, the right game win and everything. It was pretty good.
Yep. Well, I was glad to see it. It's always cool to see a home team win with all their fans cheering. And last couple times the Red Sox won, they were away, so.
Yeah, what, 1918 was the last time they had won at home or something?
That's the last time they won the World Series at home, yeah.
Yeah, that's a day or two.
Now they're like a rolling, dominant machine of baseball. They've won 3 of the last, like, 10. It's pretty good.
Have they really?
Yeah.
But they came in last year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they had an off year last year.
Was it a lot of the same players this year?
No, they traded $1 million, you know, okay, more than that, but a bunch of money of salaries away to people. They made one big trade with the Dodgers where they traded like 4 or 5 guys that they didn't even care who they got back in return. They just wanted to unload their salaries.
Yeah.
And they started over.
Well, it must have been the beards then.
Yeah, you think so?
It really makes me wonder how superstitious they're going to be next
baseball
time.
Baseball players are always superstitious. Like if the pitcher has a no-hitter going, nobody talks to him like, oh, keep going, good luck. I hope we get this no-hitter because that's supposed to be bad luck.
It's bad luck to wish someone good luck?
It's bad luck to wish a pitcher who has a no-hitter going, hey, good luck on this no-hitter that you've got going. Like, they don't even talk to him. He'll sit on the bench by himself, and nobody will even come near him.
That's sad. Does he care?
Well, yeah, it's just superstitious. Of course he cares. He's, you know, no hitter is like a really rare thing.
No, I mean, does he mind that people aren't speaking to him?
It's part of the game. That's superstitious. Okay. Yeah. What else is on your list?
You think about going out to eat and stuff like that. And when you think about going out to eat with somebody for a dinner at a decent place and everything, don't you think about things like the conversation and stuff like that? The food, of course. A lot of people go specifically for food and stuff. But when I think of dinner, I'm thinking of the company and the conversation of it and stuff like that, right? Or am I alone?
No, I think it's totally... It's the atmosphere. When you go out to dinner, it's the atmosphere.
Well, there's a restaurant that's just opened in Brooklyn. It's called Eat. And you have to be silent during a four-course meal. Evidently, the chef went to India and he observed monks who didn't talk at all at breakfast. And he kind of describes it as a way to enjoy food in a way that you might not enjoy it in another circumstance. And it's just, of course, you hear the forks clinking on the plate.
I would hate that place. I would never go there.
Would you not? Why not?
Because it's not fun.
You think it's just a fatty thing then?
I think that, I don't know what that guy's, maybe he's just trying to prove he's a great chef or his food is fantastic enough to, you know, support the whole event of going out. But that my point of going out would be to socialize and have a good time, not just the food.
Yeah, the food has very little to do with it to me. I completely agree. It's the experience, although, you know, some people might enjoy that experience. Say you have like a lot of rowdy kids at home or something and just the quiet of it. I don't know.
Yeah, that's different than making people be totally silent.
I mean, you know, I can see you wanting to comment like on the dish or something and, you know, maybe taking notes or something.
I wouldn't even go. I would not even try that place.
You wouldn't even try it?
No, because I can tell you right now I wouldn't have a good time.
That's funny.
You'd try it knowing that you have to not speak for the hour that you're eating dinner?
I mean, it's not something that I just would say I wouldn't do. I don't think it would be, so it doesn't sound like my ideal.
Would you try it?
Sure. I would try it. Why not?
Yeah. I kind of know already I wouldn't like it.
I wonder how you would order.
Maybe just point something on the menu or circle something.
Well, I hope
I went out to dinner to a food club the other night. That was kind of unusual. It's like a food and wine club. So you go into this place, it looks like a restaurant, but it's not really a restaurant. And they give you these little sheets of paper. They're not menus, but they're sheets of paper where you circle what you want and you kind of write and keep notes on what you want. It was really unprofessional because it was like they could have done it like a restaurant, even though it was a food club and it would have been more efficient. But anyway, it was interesting. They kind of forgot what you're supposed to get, and they were late in bringing some stuff out. But it turns out the food was really good. And the fact that they were inefficient and it was different made for good conversation.
Oh, I bet it did,
Because the rules were so non-existent, it kind of made it more interesting.
But I'm completely lost. So what, you got like a sheet of paper with all the different options?
Yeah, it looked like a menu, but it was a sheet of paper, and you were supposed to circle and mark down what you wanted.
And you turned it in to them?
Yeah, and then they came and collected it.
So kind of like the hospital.
And then they all came back, and they said, and then she brought them all back, and she's like, okay, now who had the French, you know, soup, and we're like, why didn't you just take, you know, there were so many ways to improve it that made it funny and interesting, and it made it like the topic of the conversation.
Well, was it a new place?
No, it's been around a couple of years.
And the wine was the same way?
Yeah. The wine you went in, and the first thing we ordered, they had a flight tasting thing where you get like five tastes of different. Mm-hmm. So we all did that, and then so she gave us like the first two. She's like, oh, did you like those? And We're like, yeah, they were both really good. She goes, well, because I can't really give you more for free. You have to, you know, you have to pick one. And we're like, well, we ordered the five, the taste of five. What do you mean? She's like, oh, yeah, I guess so. So she, like, she didn't even know what she was doing, you know. But all the wine was really good and the food was really good. And, the, you know, the awkwardness was really funny.
Well, I think you're a good sport about it.
Well, when there's not a lot of rules, it's better to not have enough rules so that it's, like, silly than to have so many rules, like not talking, which would be kind of onerous, I think.
But I think it would be a good conversation thing afterward. Can you imagine everything you would have to say or you'd want to say afterward? Or maybe you take somebody there that you don't really like.
Or maybe you don't ever go and they go out of business and die off like they should.
I don't know. I think you could take somebody that, you know, it's like, I didn't want to talk to you anyway. Okay.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Okay.
Okay, bye.